So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. You can find all the latest on the little things that we do around this place. I tell you, it's been an interesting week, or an interesting day to say the least. It was kind of funny. Today I found myself in a very odd situation. And I know this is going to sound kind of crazy to you guys, but I found myself actually defending Mayor Greg Fisher right here in Louisville. I know. I don't want anybody to get all freaked out or anything else. I think they heard me wrong. I really did. And I'll tell you why. Today, this morning, during the morning rush hour, there was a little bit of snow. The roads got slick. There were a lot of accidents. Quite frankly, my daughter-in-law was involved in one of those accidents. Minor accident. She's fine. But, as the day progressed, I started hearing a lot of people and seeing a lot of things on social media that were very critical of Mayor Greg Fisher for not getting the salt trucks out this morning. Now, let's get one thing here clear, folks. We use brine in Louisville, not salt. So it's a little bit different formula. But they were complaining because the roads were slick this morning and blaming the mayor because he didn't have anything on the roads in time, that he was caught off guard. And the reason I found myself defending Mayor Fisher was really simple. Because when you use brine, temperature is a key element. And there's a lot of variables that go into having to treat the roads. If Mayor Fisher would have used brine treatment this morning on all the roads, he would have been chastised for wasting taxpayer money because it literally would have done no good, and he would have been wasting our money. So then I have to look. We had 4 inches of snow and up to a half an inch of ice Friday and Saturday going through the weekend. And you have to look at the city of Louisville and how they responded to that. And I think the mayor did a very commendable job dealing with the weather that we had in Louisville when we needed it. I thought the city of Louisville did a fantastic job. They got the brine down the way they're supposed to. Snow plows were out and about doing their job. So I found myself defending the mayor for his actions not only this morning, but for doing such a great job over the last few days when Louisville got hit with some ice and snow like everybody else in the majority of the country did. So for you guys who are getting ready to have a heart attack, don't freak out. But it was very interesting to sit there and defend this mayor that I'm so critical of. And I just thought I'd share that with you. I thought it was pretty interesting. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Hello, Mr. Springsteen.
I tell you, man, I think I've been spoiled. And I got to be honest with you there. As a military veteran, I spent the majority of my 4 years at a place called Grand Forks, North Dakota. And ever since the mid-80s when I was there, I have not complained one bit about ice or anything else in Louisville in my life. I was born and raised in Louisville. I was here in 78 when we had the last major snowstorm prior to 1994 snowstorm that dumped about 17 inches here and shut down the city for a week. And I've seen the worst that Louisville has to offer in the way that they handle snow removal and treating roads and things like that. So, you know, being in North Dakota, I haven't seen the snow yet here that I didn't find was laughable. Even the 17 inches of snow wasn't a big deal. But to have people criticize the mayor for a very quick, something that lasted about an hour this morning, something that, you know, there was nothing he could do about with what we have available, you know, after the efforts that the city of Louisville, and not just Mayor Fisher, but give the employees credit. I mean, I'm critical of a lot of things with this city, but they did a hell of a job over the last week, and I found myself defending this guy. So forgive me if I caught you off guard. I didn't want to give you a heart attack either. You know, do what?
Oh, I say I'm on.
Yeah, you're definitely on. You're definitely
okay.
On. Do what?
You know, I was gonna say I agree. I mean, you know, we were at work when this rain turned ice, you know, turned freezing rain, turned snow hit. It hit quick, you know, and we knew it was going to get bad. There's just simply not enough equipment to stay on top of it. The rain made the brine impossible on Friday.
Right.
And all in all, they did a pretty good job. I mean, yeah, some of the roads were a mess, but that's going to happen. It's going to happen when it hits at rush hour, which it did. You know, the plows can't do their business because
sure.
Everybody's going places. So I think they did a good job. I mean, you wake up Saturday morning, but bam, roads are clean. So that was admirable. And, of course, this morning, that's the same. Going to work this morning, started off, you could feel a little mist coming down, and I thought, oh, no. and then on the way into work, just literally that fast, it started snowing. And I was thinking to myself the whole way, it's like, this wasn't supposed to happen. This is a little more than they forecasted, which, you know, the mayor's got to go on that. You got to go on the forecast. It wasn't really supposed to happen quite like that.
Well, no, and again, he would have been chastised if he'd have spent it.
I could say both Louisville and Bullock County. I got to give their judge executive and Mount Washington
right.
some props too. These roads were clear. As soon as the snow stopped and the sun came out, whether it was salt, plows, or brine or whatever they put down, they got them clear. So it's like, hey guys, you know, sorry, you know, take a chill pill. I know some people, either, you know, Democrats and Republicans want to climb on him, and he's kind of monotone and. I'm not a real charismatic guy, and maybe people don't like him, but, you know, at some point when the snow just starts and it wasn't like it was forecast way out, lighten up, you know, really.
Well, that's
it. Wasn't that much snow anyways, but, you know, they'll get it taken care of. It's just it's a little freakish spurt of heavier snow than we thought. Definitely not something anybody needs to chastise the mayor on. There's worse things.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, I mean, it's rare for those who think that we don't give this mayor or the Democrats any credit in this town. You know, we do. When they do something to deserve credit, you give them credit. And this is just one of those situations. I'm not going to spend a whole show on weather, but I found it very funny, though, that he was being chastised for all of that with so many things going on. That they're going to choose to pick on this mayor over a weather-related incident. And quite frankly, most of the problems with the weather isn't the fact that the city isn't doing their job. So, you know, give the mayor credit for that, but it's the fact that we have a bunch of idiots who refuse to change their driving habits in inclement weather. You know, when you have snow and ice on the ground, folks, when you're out there driving, don't lock your brakes up. You're probably not going to slide. You tap your brakes. You go real slow. You tap your brakes. You don't lock them up. You don't hit your accelerator and get some speed up and not allow yourself time to stop. Just stupid stuff. But, you know, moving on, though, we've got to get off of weather, man. I'm sorry. My name is not Reed Yaden or John Belsky, and that ain't what we come to this show for. But good job, Mayor Fisher. Take all the hits they're going to give you right now, because I think you've done a good job over the last week. And believe me, dealing with feet and feet of snow, I know.
Understand. If the next snowstorm that hits, you don't do a good job, we're going to be on your ass about it.
Well, that's a given, isn't it? That's a given. That's what
yeah,
we do.
Well,
if you
mean,
do it
you know,
wrong, we're going to nail you.
Job well done. Job well done. If you drop the ball, okay, well, we'll talk about that too. So,
Well, there you go.
Let's hope we keep the roads clear because, you know, I need them clear. UPS needs them clear. Everybody needs them clear. Like you said, if they're not clear, then no shortage of people who just don't get it on snow and ice.
Well, there you go. And moving on to other Louisville things, University of Louisville quarterback Teddy Bridgewater was not selected as a finalist for the Heisman Trophy. There were four quarterbacks that are Heisman Trophy candidates that are finalists, Jordan Lynch, A.J. McCarron, Jameis Winston, and, of course, Johnny Manziel, who won last year. Teddy Bridgewater had a hard road to come through this year. I think, in my opinion, I think Teddy Bridgewater, U of L quarterback, is probably the best U of L quarterback we've had. I don't know, Johnny Unitas maybe? You can go back a long way. And I think that in another year, a different year than this one, Teddy Bridgewater would have been a finalist. Would he have won? Probably not. And I tell you why. You know, U of L simply did not have a good strength of schedule. Teddy Bridgewater pulled some stuff off against Cincinnati that I just thought was miraculous. I mean, he ran backwards carrying tacklers with him for 12 yards on a 4th and 10 to get a first down. The guy could thread the eye of a needle. Was he worthy of Heisman consideration? Yes. But in the world we live in, you're just not going to get that. So, you know, there's a lot of Cardinals out there today who are upset and crying and whining, basically saying that Bridgewater got screwed. He didn't get screwed, folks. He had better teams with better strength of schedule and better quarterbacks out there. Teddy's a great quarterback, but I'll be honest with you, I don't think he's an NFL quarterback, not yet. In my opinion, he needs to throw some weight on him and really get back out there, so I hope to see him another year. You know, we've got other reports coming out there. A story that we have been following or that I've been reporting for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years anyway, involves the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I don't know if you've seen this story or not, Ed, but the Inspector General, State Inspector General here, has finally accused some top officials with the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife of misusing public resources and employees. This all revolves around former Commissioner Jonathan Gassett. I have brought about the plight of Jonathan Gassett for the last few years. I went to Frankfurt and fought on behalf of Senate Bill 64 to get more accountability, and it was passed just a couple of years ago. So, you know, we've got a 7-month investigation that's finally telling the whole world everything that we've been telling about Gassett. He was nothing but a crooked little scum that misused and abused everything he could get his hands on. Even the state inspector generals are looking at that now. That's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, any time you go after corruption and, you know, again, this Mark Twain, you know, as the world ends, you want to be in Kentucky because everything happens, whatever, 10 years later there. It's about time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they should be more responsive, but, you know, they're in there. They're getting it done, finally. But it's just, this just goes to Kentucky being the fourth most corrupt state in the United States. It's, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's in a county for, you know, steering contracts towards a contractor about rebuilding after a disaster like a tornado in West Liberty or this. It's just like, God, can everybody is trying to get a little something more. It's not enough that you get a state pension. It's not enough that you get a salary for, you know, obviously what's not a real tough job if you've got time to be corrupt on the side. Like, really,
well,
God, just do your job. You know, if you want your lake stocked with fish, don't do it underhandedly. Pay for it. You know, it kills me how people play these games in this state.
Well, it really does. And I tell you, in the case of Gassett, this guy's bad news. The only thing that really bothers me about this whole thing is they just completed a 7-month investigation, and that they found all these illegal acts of wrongdoing have been going back at least 5 years. A lot of people don't know John Gassett resigned just a couple of months ago in the midst of this investigation. You know, if they would have started investigating, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when I first started reporting this story and bringing these charges and letting people know about them, a guy by the name of Ballard Rogers brought up official charges. You can go to edspringson.com and use the search box to look up John Gassett, and you're going to see everything, the KDFWR. You're going to see everything. Ballard Rogers did an excellent job laying it out. We did an excellent job, at you know, here as part of Louisville News, laying out the problems years ago. But they protected him until he was ready to resign, and then they finally went after him. So it's going to be interesting how that works out, but I hope the guy gets some serious repercussions for it. And hat tip, too, as well, to the League of Kentucky Sportsmen and Bill Haycraft primarily. These guys got involved from the very beginning, worked with me with information and things like that. We've been able to put that out over the last few years. So there's a lot of people involved. Justice is slow, folks, but we finally got some. You know, Ed, I kind of want to get some national stuff tonight, and I tell you, interesting comment and some major backlash against Senator Rand Paul right here in Kentucky. And I tell you what it's all about. Rand Paul, excuse me, folks, that's silent. 1 second. I've got the Kentucky crud going, guys. We're going at a sneezing fit here, so I apologize for cutting in and out like that. Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul told Fox News Sunday when he was talking about unemployment that he supports unemployment benefits for the 26 weeks that they're paid for. However, if you extend it beyond that, you do a disservice to these workers, and he doesn't support that. Now, people see this, and they immediately started jumping to conclusions about how Rand Paul is out there, you know, don't care about people on unemployment and all these other things. But when you listen to the rest of the context of this, what Rand Paul said clearly as part of this speech about this, or as part of this answer about this, what he said was, when you go to employers and they see somebody that's been laid off or been off of work for 4 weeks versus a guy who's been off of work for 52 weeks, they're going to hire the guy who's been off 4 weeks 100% of the time. And that's the disservice to the workers. And I think I totally honestly agree with that. The longer that you're on unemployment, the harder it is to find a job. Is that right or wrong? You're an employer. What do you think?
I would say employers look at it. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it wouldn't be – I can tell you that I've had people come in and put applications in. You know, you ask them, okay, you know, what's this gap here? And they're –
Ed, we're losing you, buddy. Ed apparently is having some communication problems. He'll jump back in a second, I guess, when he gets his signal worked out. There you are. Okay.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, go ahead.
But no, I'd say absolutely. You know, you get people come in. If a guy is, it's always favorable, and I've always said it, I'd much rather steal somebody from another employer because they're working
right.
And they haven't been fired from it. But beyond that, yeah, I've had people come in, and they'll tell you, you know, the reason they're applying for a job is because their unemployment benefits run out. You know, and you look at the job
right.
application, and you see, oh, crap, you know, there's a 99-week hole in their employment. And you do.
Right.
You know, and think, okay, they're, you know, you have to look at it that way. They're out of the habit of getting up early in the morning. And as an employer, you sometimes you have to look at it and think to yourself, okay, the guy's unemployment wore out. Obviously, likes unemployment.
Right, right.
Was there for a while. And, you know, there are jobs out there that are hiring. And, yeah, I think another thing employers worry about is your unemployment premiums are oftentimes based on unemployment. You know, how often you get hit. And you see a person that comes in with a history of, you know, appearing to like unemployment, you start thinking you might have a problem there because you start thinking this person's not really, you know, you want somebody that wants to work and you get somebody that's kind of run out of options and now they have to work, you do have to ask yourself that question, you know, is they're here because they have to be or are they here to, you know, put in enough time and maybe reset that unemployment clock?
Well, I think ultimately, too, what you run into a situation, you know, that the reality is this. You know, a lot of people who get these extended benefits for unemployment and everything else, you know, you take a Ford worker, for example, their unemployment benefits, you know, are $400-something dollars a week, okay? But if these guys are laid off, you know, like they just went through a year layoff, during the shutdown when they were retooling LAP, so these people were drawing unemployment for a year, you know, it's kind of hard to tell that person to go work for $9 an hour when unemployment is paying more than you can make in a private sector. And the reality is most of the jobs that appear to be available today that are readily available, especially here in Louisville, Kentucky, I can't speak for the rest of the nation, but our job market is basically primarily temporary full-time or temporary part-time jobs that pay between $8 and $10 an hour to start. And they're temporary jobs. So it's hard to compare when you're taking home $300 or more a week on unemployment to take a pay cut to get up every day and go to work, add gas cost into that, add the other cost into that for going to work every day, and you're taking home 60 or 70 bucks less a week. So, you know, you got to look at that, too. I think Rand Paul was dead on.
Even if it's not that, if a person's looking at it and says they're getting $400 a week, and let's say they get a halfway decent job, it might be paying, let's call it $13 an hour. Mm-hmm. Really, the difference between the new job and the unemployment is essentially $3 an hour. So, you got to make that judgment call. I'm basically getting $3 an hour more to get up and go to work for 8 hours a day as opposed to, taking unemployment and going deer hunting or turkey hunting.
Well, sure, but we also got to look at the reality, too, though. When you talk about $2 or $3 an hour, you can think about that. But at the same time, again, when you're drawing unemployment, your money is either direct deposited into your account or you get a check sent to your home. You don't have any costs. You don't have the vehicle costs, the transportation costs, gas or any of that stuff, all the other things that go with it. So, there's a lot to come into play there. I think Rand Paul was definitely dead on with what he said when it comes to prospective employers. And keeping people on unemployment that long. But, at the end of the day, it really comes down to two things. One, are you going to lose money coming off of unemployment? And two, where's the drive and desire to take care of yourself? That's what's really lacking today. I don't get it. Let's go to the phones real quick. We've got a 303 number. You're on the line. What can we do for you?
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Hey, sounds like you sound to me. How are you, sir?
It is. How you doing, buddy? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. What can we do for you, man?
Well, you're talking about an interesting conversation. Right now, my group, my organization, Man Up, we kind of helping some of these temp organizations and even helping the WASH on the bridge to find qualified people to get them employment. But we kind of having conversation with them between the years before they go, because what I found out, I'm sure your employer probably the mindsets of people today who want to work don't seem to have the right mindset to go to work. They don't seem to have the right attitude about getting the job. They look like they want everything to be handed to them and everything, but they don't want to muss up anything to make them worthy or qualify themselves to be able to participate in it. And that's these are some sad moments in the times we're living in today. So
I actually agree with a lot of what you're saying, Michonne, because that really is, because work is a mindset. You have to be prepared. You have to want to work. You want to provide for yourself. That personal responsibility in today's world is totally gone. But at the same time, when we look at the Louisville market, let's focus here for a minute. When you look at the Louisville market, for example, all we have are these temporary warehouse jobs. And what you see is an employer sector, not an employee, an employer sector that takes somebody in. They work them for a few days. They don't like the way they look, and believe me, that happens. I've seen that happen firsthand. They just don't like somebody the way they look. There's something about them that they don't like. They just send them back to the temp agency. We don't want you no more. And the temp agency sends somebody else over. And what we're doing is we're creating a workforce that looks like they're constantly turning over jobs because they're consistently going through warehouse after warehouse after warehouse. And I've seen guys that were real good workers that, for whatever reason, the boss or the lead person, if you will, didn't like them. So they just send them back and bring somebody else in. Now when you add all the other things going on, and let's look at another part of this, and we're going to get into this discussion in a minute anyway. But let's look at Obamacare. Do you think employees want to make any of these temp workers full-time workers and have to be responsible for the money that's going to cost them for that?
When you factor it in that and everything too, employers got to be concerned about, you know, their bottom line and what's best for them and everything. And sometimes just the fact of just getting a little work out of somebody, not knowing darn well that you're not going to keep them full time, is could be the new hustle. Everybody's trying to take it. It's just it's a mean cycle that we in today, you know, in the times that we're living in today, man.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Really, Ed Martin.
I'm gonna throw in another factor that you've not heard about, because I like to refer to these activists as self-important activists. But I mean, it's all over the media nowadays. You know, this raise the minimum wage, raise it up. You know, living wage.
$15
an hour. I mean,
basically,
in a lot of cases, I think a lot of the attitude that you're speaking of, you know, people come, they kind of wonder if they really want to work. I kind of wonder how much of that is actually generated by these self-righteous activists and stuff that are out there, and, you know, they're just pulling numbers. They're pulling these numbers up saying, a job without $15 an hour, at least not a living wage, that's slavery. You know, that's far away. And I think it thinks in with a lot of younger people and you know, older people. I think it thinks in with everybody. You know, you go to apply for a job, and it's like, well, what's it pay? It's like, well, you know, we open up at whatever, $11.50 an hour. You know, in the back of their mind, they're thinking, oh yeah, slave labor. That's what this is. You know, I constantly hear that unless I'm making at least $15 an hour, I might as well just be on the plantation and be getting whipped or something like that.
Let me ask both of you guys this. Go ahead, Bichon.
Let me jump in here real quick, because, Ed, did you see my posting on my webpage, on my Facebook, what I specifically said? It's what Fred Sanford talking about. you want $15 an hour for putting tickles. you dummy. You know, I want to jump in this because, you know, when I first came out of the military and with my trade as a surgical technologist and everything, I started out with $15 an hour, okay? But that was a trade. I mean, I came out with experience and this and that. We're talking about entry-level jobs, and there were people. These jobs not meant for you to stay in them. They meant to be for you to advance and move on. Where are people getting the idea that they need to come out and get in a darn fast food job making $15 an hour? I'm in agreement with you, man. I think it's some self-righteous organization or somebody trying to push some things. And I don't know, man. I think it's something more behind
utopia.
That than what it is.
It's the liberal utopia and the socialism.
I don't know that it's a conspiracy, but, you know, I sit there and it's everywhere. It really is. It's all over social media. You know, the cameras, they're ready to turn the cameras on and have some activist who's actually, and you think of the irony, some activist who's got a bunch of volunteers standing behind them, you know, in some cases working for nothing, in some cases they're paid volunteers. But, you know, and they're sitting there telling the whole world, if you ain't drawing $15 an hour, you're subhuman. You know, how can you allow yourself to be treated that way? But then some kid or some middle-aged person goes to apply for a job, and they say, oh, they say, you know, what is it? It might be $11 an hour entry.
Well, here's the thing for me.
That's slave labor. That's slave labor.
Well, there's a couple of things, though.
I might as well just go to China and work for a bowl of rice or something, because, you know, there's no dignity in this job. I think that's beginning to seep into the American psyche.
Well, it really is. And let me tell you, you know, because I talked a little bit about this last night, you know, but it's interesting to me. You might as well let's make the minimum wage $100 an hour. Seriously, put any number. I'm serious about this, guys. Put any number you want to on minimum wage, because those costs are going to be passed off to the consumer, and you're going to be at the same place today making $7 an hour that you're going to be at making $100 an hour.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what you make an hour. The hourly rate is irrelevant, and it's interesting because you talk about activists. One of the biggest activists who's talking about all this jobs for justice crap and everything else is Councilwoman Attica Scott. Attica Scott is making more money. Attica Scott is making more money as an elected council person each year than she has ever made in her entire life.
Whole freaking whole life.
You betcha.
Of that, man, I wish you wouldn't have not brought her name up, bro. Let me tell you what she did with me, man. Hold on.
Go ahead.
I got to tell you this, man. I'm at a community event, okay? My councilwoman person, Sherry Hammond, is sitting right next to me. I ain't never met Miss Annika Scott, okay? So I decided I was going to meet her. So I just walk up to her and say, how you doing there, Miss Scott? Let me listen up, man. If you were there, bro, you would have failed. Let me tell you what this little young chickadee, smart lad, little woman did. She's going to say, you would address me as Councilwoman Annika Scott. Can you believe that piece of bullcrap?
Actually, I do believe that.
If it wasn't for the fact that I was in a public area and I just was so shocked that she came at me that way, bro, I would have ate head. And even I don't even talk to Shay Hamilton that way, and she's my damn councilwoman. She nudged me and said, oh my God. I mean,
you know me,
she's making the most money that she's ever made in her whole freaking life.
Well, you know me, Sean. The first thing out of my mouth when she came at me that way and said, you will address me as Councilwoman Scott? I said, no, typically I would address you as asshole, but that's another conversation for another day. I mean, that's exactly what I would have told her, and I know that. Everybody knows that. I don't
believe that she said.
Do not ever put up that egotistical crap. This is an elected representative who's lived her whole life on minimum wage or government handouts. She's never earned a damn thing in her life.
She ain't never worked a decent job in her whole freaking life, okay? I agree.
She doesn't know the value of an honest
thing. I have to laugh because this past week I was at a political function, and some fairly high ups were there, you know. And I just walked up and called them by their first name, and a couple people looked at me kind of funny. And, of course, you know me. I just looked around and said, what? He works for me.
They work for him.
Well, that's the thing.
I mean, let's not get this thing twisted.
I'm not going to call anybody. I'll call you
if
later.
You're going to walk up.
You work for me.
That's it. Yeah, I'm on a first name basis with Rand Paul, for example. You know, I mean, you know, just because you use somebody's first name, it doesn't mean anything. It's all about being cordial, it's all about being polite. Huh? Do what?
I said you're not disrespecting them when you do it. Listen, I served in the military.
Because
it's military is a different entity versus out here in this civilian sector. I can't believe these individuals and everything. They act like they elected to be in a certain position, and they think that we need to bow down to them. This is because of the politics that we as the American people have allowed these politicians to twist it on us, man. And it's our fault that we have allowed that to happen.
Oh, I totally agree. Now, the flip side is when I'm out in public and I would see Rand Paul, you know, I mean, you want to be respectful and polite and public. How are you? You know, Senator, how are you, sir? You know, that kind of a deal. You know, when you're in a gathering and as a group, you know, it's not a public event, but it's a private event. You know, how are you, Rand? Everything going okay? What's going on in Washington? It's no big deal.
Right.
That's what you do, you know. But people need to understand, Annika Scott has never been anything more than an idiot who has gotten what she's got. By raising up and telling everybody the world is bad because she's too lazy to go get a real job. I'm sorry. That's just Annika Scott. But to get back to the topic, though, if we're going to talk about minimum wage and we're going to talk about employers, it doesn't matter what number you put on minimum wage. And I'm still waiting for somebody to give me a rational explanation as to what the term living wage signifies. Because there are people out there who are living on minimum wage. They've got a one-bedroom apartment. They don't have any kids. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe society made an error here. Because two of the fascinating stories, when you talk about McDonald's like you did a minute ago, putting big pickles on buns, let's look at the reality here. McDonald's has always been a starting job. Yet when we saw these stories over the last few weeks where McDonald's workers won $15 an hour, they wanted to start quoting like this woman who'd been working, well, I've been working here 10 years, and I'm barely making minimum wage. And I can't, I've been working here 10 years, I'm barely making minimum wage, and I can't afford to feed my kids on that. Well, how old are your kids? Under the age of 10. Why did you have kids and have a family on minimum wage when you knew you couldn't afford that? It's not McDonald's responsibility.
And it's a thing about living under your means, okay? If you got a job that's only paying you minimum wage, that doesn't mean that you go and try to live a lifestyle that's paying you $20, $30 an hour and wondering why you can't be able to take care of your means and everything. I mean, you living above your means, okay?
Why would you go out and have children and bring them into this world when you can't pay for them but you're working minimum wage at McDonald's?
Right.
And then you got to look at the other side of this. I used a good example last night, and I'll use it again tonight. You know, the more you start screaming and hollering about wanting more and more and more, what you're doing is you're empowering employers and you're empowering society at large, the people who make the decisions and create these jobs, to find other ways to cut costs. Take Ford Motor Company, for example.
Exactly.
Ford Motor Company used to employ 7,000 to 10,000 more people right here in Louisville than they do today. How were those jobs lost?
That's what they're trying to do. Yeah.
Well, what they did is they took technology, they created these robots, bought these robots, and these robots eliminated jobs. For every robot job out at Ford, they lost two employee jobs. And believe me, there are hundreds of robots at each one of these plants. I worked there. I know. Or I used to work there, I should say. So when you look at this, what's going on at McDonald's? McDonald's added 64,000 U.S. jobs last year. Starting wage jobs, folks. But what nobody's paying attention to is over in Europe, McDonald's is investing their money and putting these kiosk machines up, like the ATM machines. You walk up, you place your own order, you pay for your order right there at the machine, and then at the end of the counter, your order is going to be waiting for you. Guess what? You just eliminated jobs. And when you start raising those costs up to $15 an hour, when you're making absolutely zero, seven and a quarter don't look too bad. And that's the situation.
Hey.
That's what's going to happen. Ed Martin, if I'm not mistaken.
Actually, McDonald's average starting is 810. But, you know, and that gets back to, you know, and I often refer to a lot of jobs, and it's not to be demeaning, but it's just reality. It's called low-skill or no-skill jobs. And if you've ever looked at a lot of the cash registers now, they have writing on them, but they also have pictures on them. Because at some point we've gotten to that level of skill.
You're
so
on that one. Yeah,
so, I mean,
all they're doing is just turning the cash register around,
letting the keyboard and letting the customers have a look at it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to. You know, Ed Martin, we also covered a story just a couple of months ago, I believe it was. It hadn't been that long ago. Yeah, exactly. Where you've got a company that has now made a whole process, a burger making process. You will order your burgers at the kiosk. The robots will automatically cook your burger fresh right then and there. No humans at all. You'll have to have somebody fill in the supply bins, of course. They will cut your lettuce fresh. It will cut your tomato fresh. It will slice your pickle fresh. It will dress that burger with fresh cut product. It will wrap it for you, and it will deliver it to the end of the counter. You know what you need in that situation? You need two workers. You need one guy to keep the bins full at all times, and you need a maintenance guy to keep the robots moving. That's it. You just eliminated two shifts full of workers throughout that whole restaurant, and they're actually working on that now, and they're going to open it up, I think, in California. But they're going to open this place up to the general public probably in the next year as a test model, and when that happens, you can kiss all these jobs goodbye anyway. Then where are you at? All these no-skill people who want to go out and have 100 kids on $7 an hour.
$7.25 start looking pretty good.
But that's where you go. But see, that's the liberal utopia. The liberal utopia wants everybody unemployed that the government has to take care of, but the liberals who are making those decisions don't have one clue as to who's going to pay for this crap when we're all out of work. When you've got more than 50% of the people in this country depending on the government dime, that government dime isn't anything the government owns. It's money that me and you own that they're trying to take away from us. Now, you know, this is the way it is. So we've got all these things going on. We've got a president who's lying through his teeth about everything. He just got caught once again lying about not knowing his illegal immigrant uncle from Kenya when he actually stayed with the guy when he was in Harvard Law School. So that's another lie. You know, all these things are covered up. Then you've got the banking industry that we started talking about last night, Ed. We have less banks today, less than 7,000 banks that are operating today throughout this country. That's less banks than that we had during the Great Depression. Less banks than we had during the Great Depression. So the bailouts didn't fix the banking industry. The bailout allowed these guys to consolidate even more wealth. We've got all of these things going on. Everybody's going crazy. And then lo and behold, the liberal utopia says, let's have health care. Let's make it even harder. Here are some disturbing stories coming out that nobody has paid attention to. This is one that came out today that everybody needs to pay attention to. Apparently, Obamacare has got another problem. Obamacare is going to force thousands of volunteer fire departments to close. Now think about this. Because of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, for those who want to be politically correct, because of the Affordable Care Act, any company with more than 50 workers has to either give them health insurance or pay fines, right? Everybody can agree on that. There are 1 million fire departments in the U.S. 87% of those are staffed entirely or mostly by volunteers. What happens here is, and this is where the twist is, the Department of Labor uses that term volunteer very literal. If you're a volunteer, you're a volunteer. You count as an employee. But the IRS, who is overseeing Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act, says that volunteer firefighters are technically employees. They are technically employees. So they are subject to Obamacare's employee mandate rules. Now, when you look at this, 87% of your fire protection in this country was just jeopardized. As if that wasn't bad enough, I can't make this stuff up, folks. I got to tell you this. A U.S. Treasury Department spokesperson put out in a statement that the agency has received a number of comments concerning volunteer firefighters and other volunteers in response to proposed regulations issued last December. Okay? But they didn't stop there. No, they had to go further. They had to say, we are taking these comments into account as we work toward issuing final regulations on the employer responsibility provision of the Affordable Care Act. Now, think about that statement. Obamacare has been voted in years ago. We were told it was going to be implemented in January of 2014. Here we are 3 weeks away from the full implementation, which we know is not full because Obama in some way or another has decided he's the ultimate god and is exempting everybody. Okay, but here we are 3 weeks away from what's left, and we're still working towards final regulations. Wasn't this decided when it was voted into law, Ed Martin?
Well, I've been saying it all along. It's like either just get up there and postpone the whole damn thing or enforce the whole damn thing. To me, it's that simple. You can't be selective about it.
How can you sit here and be working on any kind of final regulations 3 weeks before whatever you've got left is implemented? You know, that's interesting. And here's another one, too.
The thing is, like, okay, guys, you drew it up, you know, however many pages it was. You voted on it. You passed it. And that was 3 years ago or more. It's like, okay, so did you, A, that means you didn't understand. You didn't draw it up. Somebody else drew it up for you because you don't understand what's in it. You don't understand how to implement it. So, and that means you didn't read it before you voted on it. And then that means, you know, the question asked, yes, what the hell you've been doing for 3 years? Because, you know, at that rate, you could read just a couple pages a day and get through it, you know, but they didn't
sure.
do it.
Well, we have to pass it to see what's in it. And here's – sorry, Nancy Pelosi. Here's another interesting part of this. This is really interesting as well because, as we all know now, President Obama lied. He's been lying forever saying you can keep your health plan, you can keep your doctor, all this crap that he can get it passed. But now we're finding out another problem. Actually, there's multiple problems, but this is the second problem we've got. Apparently, your prescription drug coverage is not all it's supposed to be. As a matter of fact, if you have multiple sclerosis, AIDS, HIV, cancer, and a whole host of other life-threatening things like that, you know, or serious issues like that, a lot of those drugs aren't going to be covered at all. So if you're on Obamacare, if you're in Obamacare, if you're on Medicaid, Medicare, whatever, a lot of these drugs aren't going to be covered. So now you're going to have to pay out of pocket for these drugs that your insurance has been paying for you now. Now, when you consider some of these drugs run hundreds or even thousands of dollars per month, and you're living on a Social Security income, explain how you're going to do that. And, oh, by the way, you're going to pay for those with cash. They're not going to count as part of your pocket caps. You're not, these aren't going to count towards your caps out of pocket. So,
I just want to say, and I'm going to say it on the record, man, you know, is that in 2014, my friends, that this Obamacare or Affordable Care Act or whatever you want to call it, it's going to be it's going to be the destruction of the Democratic Party, okay, as we know it right now. I think it's going to be the very thing. If the Conservative Party act right and do the things they need to do, it's going to be the thing that's going to really devastate and open up some people's eyes and realize that this thing is not what it was meant to be. And we're also going to find out the people who've been backing it and everything, what their intentions is. I think it's going to be the death of the Democratic Party. Mark my word, I think it is.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that think that, and I'll be honest with you. You know, one could only hope. But, you know, I really don't understand. I'm not sure that's going to happen because we still have so many people out there who actually believe this crap. That's what makes it so strange. You know, even though we've got more than 50% of the young people today want to impeach this president, thank goodness, you know, we still have so many people that actually go out and vote who still think it's the right thing to do, this healthcare thing that he's doing. And for the record, I want to point one thing out here, too, because a lot of people aren't even paying attention to this. One of the biggest arguments that you get from mainstream media and the liberal left media, and I have to say that because they all say the same thing, is that the Republicans have never presented any plan, that the Republicans have never presented any alternate proposals or anything else. Well, that's a lie. You have something called the Patients' Choice Act that was introduced in May of 2009, by Paul Ryan and Senator Tom Coburn. You have the Empowering Patients First Act. It was introduced in July of 2009 by Tom Price, representative. You have the Patient Option Act that was introduced just a couple of months ago in August of 2013 by Paul Brown. And you've got the American Healthcare Reform Act that was introduced on September the 18th by Representative Phil Rowe. The one thing that all of these have in common is this. The Democratic-controlled Senate and Harry Reid refused to allow the Senate to vote on these. What would these things have done? Think about all the tenets of Obamacare, and then think about this. These acts were going to put emphasis on prevention. They were going to put penalties on insurance companies that don't accept patients with pre-existing conditions. Sound familiar? They were going to create these regional pooling of things. They were going to expand the HSAs, or the health savings accounts, for most people that know about those. They were going to prevent tax increases for new government spending for this junk. They were going to provide tax incentives. Obamacare does that for purchasing health insurance. But they were going to limit abortion funding, which they should. It's not our responsibility as taxpayers to fund abortion. Okay? You've got all of these different things that are going on. And that whole list goes on and on and on. But everything Obamacare, the Republicans have tried to tackle. But the Senate says, no. Harry Reid says, no, I want this. And Harry Reid is such an idiot, he doesn't even comprehend. Harry Reid's own insurance went up a few thousand dollars when he went into Obamacare recently. So we've got to look at all of this. Where is the sense of right and wrong or the morality in any of this? I mean, I don't get this. The Republicans have tried, so everybody's lied about that. Where is the mainstream media? Where are they? Why are they not doing their job? Where are the Edward Murrows? Where are the Walter Cronkites? Where are the people who made us believe in the media at one time? Have they sold out that bad? What's that, Ed?
I say their ratings would seem to suggest that they've sold out, and people know it now, wouldn't it?
You know what? I agree with you. I agree with you.
I've long thought they've sold out. I mean, they get in with an agenda. I think a lot of times it's the mindset of a journalist. And there are some damn good journalists, but you know, I've known a few at the paper, and this is just, and I've read some articles that are, you know, critical of journalism. And you know, a lot of these guys go to school, guys and gals, they go to school, they want to be journalists because, you know, they want to save the world. They want to be the next Woodward and Bernstein. They want to expose, you know, they want to have some impact. They don't get into journalism and news because, you know, they just, that they think, you know, what the hell, they like writing a lot. It's not the reason they get in. So they get into the very field is sort of an activist field. So, you know, it's just, there's just something to, you know, being boring and dry and just trying to solve problems like, you know, a business major in college would do. Kind of like the Republican Party, but, you know, the Democrats, they get in, they come in with this save the world crap, and the journalists, well, they connect with that. They're like, oh, okay, you know, I can be a part of you saving the world, you know, because you and the media and the government, we can do it together, as opposed to, you know, government looking at business saying, hey, why don't you help us? You know, I mean, well, the business would look at you and says, I'm not into saving the world.
It's totally amazing because, you know, that's the whole thing, because the media is supposed to report the news, not sit there and have their own separate agenda. You know, we often hear about Fox and Fair and Balanced or CNN as ultra-left liberal and all this crap, but they're all basically the same, and that's what's so puzzling to me. You know, it's like, and by the way, for anyone listening to the show, and there's always thousands of you, we appreciate it. You know, we are having a fundraiser right now, but what's interesting, you know, you're talking about how their numbers are down, Ed, and I tell you what, I was doing the research because I'm working on new fundraising letters and ad letters and things like that, and I tell you, I was doing the research, and the last data available shows that internet advertising with online radio and websites is number two in the amount of money spent on ads to broadcast TV. The difference is less than 2%, and internet advertising on online radio and online websites, online ad revenue is expected to go even above broadcast TV. Newspapers are now at the bottom of that list, or toward the bottom of that list. Regular over-the-air radio, like your HAS Clear Channels and all them, they're dropping constantly. They're even cutting their rates way down to try to compensate. You know, so it's very clear that today, we have so many avenues available, including this MVM radio network, and this show is one part of that, you know, for advertising revenue that's going to reach a targeted audience. For example, this show is a political show, right? We deal with news, we deal with issues, we deal with politics and politicians. You know, so it makes sense for politicians to spend their money on shows like this. And that's exactly what's going on, which is why internet ad revenue has went through the roof. What's fascinating is you would think that all of these news places, their numbers are going down, as you so eloquently mentioned. They would adapt their way of doing business to compete, right? Wouldn't you think they would? And they're not. Why?
No, they keep ramming the same product down everybody's throat with the same attitude. I think that's what turns so many people off about the so much of the mainstream media. It's like, okay, so your content's not that great, you know? A lot of content's not that great, but you're not entertaining, and if you watch it long enough, you pick up on it, like you're condescending. You think, you know, you're telling me what to think, and I don't like it. So but people leave. That's why I've given up on, you know, the Courier Journal.
You're not the only one. They're getting ready to go down even further.
You know, and that's why I watch local news for weather and sports and stuff, but I won't watch the national news because I'm just sick to death of watching Chuck Todd. I've always said that boy has to wear diapers when he interviews or talks about Barack Obama. He gets so excited. He's got a wedding stuff like a puppy, I swear. You know, it's like, no. Give me somebody like that that can, you know, they can just be dry and dull and ask some serious questions, you know, maybe even be a little intimidating to the president every once in a while when he gets on a roll. But it's like, no, this, I don't want your worship. I don't want you to tell me who to worship. And if that's what you're going to try to do, then, you know, click, I'll go to Discovery Channel, no problem.
Well, you know, it must be a liberal, it must be a left-leaning liberal media in a handbook or something, because, you know, they all have to have diapers. Chris Matthews pees down his leg. I mean, he's mentioned that on TV. So, you know, the bottom line is, man, just nobody's doing their job. But we've got some serious problems in this country. And until we're willing to address those and start demanding, I mean demanding accountability, you know, we're going to continue to have problems. So I'm personally glad that, you know, shows like this, our website, LouisvillePolitics.com, Springsteen.com, those things, I'm personally glad that our internet business is growing so rapidly, because we're in a position now where, you know, where we compete with you know, print media here in Louisville, Kentucky, and across the country. So, you know, we've got all kinds of things. We compete with the mainstream media, the mainstream radio here. We've got the same numbers at our Clear Channel affiliation. So, you know, this is really interesting, and I just can't believe mainstream isn't doing their job and realizing their business model isn't working. You know, we're getting the numbers. We're not getting their money yet, but we're getting the numbers. We've got the numbers they've got. We'll take their money here very soon. Show's winding down, my friend. Final thoughts.
Well, you know, final thoughts. Just go one more plug. I'm not going to slap the mainstream media too hard, but you know, another reason is as with this show, you know, when I check in, I have no idea where you're going. You know, and that makes it entertaining. But I think the other thing is that, you know, we tend to have a conservative slant to us, but we're open minded. But the most important thing is we may opinionate, we may opine, we may rant and rave, but unlike so much of the mainstream media, we're open to hear what you got to say. You know, you can call up, and if you don't like what we're saying, okay, let's hash it out. You know, the condescension, granted, there's some polarization. You and I are that way. But the condescension's not there. You know, we're not going to sit there and hit somebody on the phone and say, "You will address me as Mr. Springsteen," you know, poetic Scott or something like that. I'm not going to do that. We just say, "Hey, all right, what's on your mind?" And if you disagree, you know, okay, well, we may disagree with you disagreeing, but we're going to hash it out and do it mano a mano. And the condescension's not there. So, you know, that's something else for people to think about. I think that's a big part of why internet, you know, whether it's internet radio or whether it's even just on the internet, you know, typing things in or videos or anything. The internet, for the most part, you're free to interact. And if you don't like something you see, join the fray. You know, you can be heard. You can make your opinion known. And like it on this show, if you don't like it, call up and unload on us. We can take it.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, if you look at what we do, for example, I mean, that's the one thing that always drove me nuts. When we went down this road with MVM and Louisville News and everything else just a few years ago, you know, the deal was always the same. Yes, we both lean conservative. That's who we are. But the deal was always the same. We want to promote the discussion. We want the communication. We want to listen to other sides. And the very first couple of years we were in existence, said, if you remember, you know, what we did is we brought on candidates. We had a guest every week. We spent the whole show with nothing but political candidates for the most part, you know, and they ranged from Democrats to Republicans, independents. We had independent nut jobs like Nimbus Cousins on. We treated him with respect, but he's a Looney Tune. We brought, you know, known notoriety, notorious people here, Tyler Allen, Democrat, Mike Slayton, Democrat, Lieutenant Governor Dan Mangiardo, Democrat. You know, it's always been about promoting communication and discussion. You don't have to like my view, but explain to me why my view is wrong and what could be done different. It's like that whole living wage thing I brought up earlier. Somebody explain it to me. I'm not trying to be the jerk about it, but the reality is that we have gotten in this country to where we don't know how to communicate. Our failures in communication are a true sign of failed leadership. And that failed leadership is on both sides of the coin, folks. The uniparty, as we often refer to the two-party system on this show, is alive and well. For every Democrat who is out there lying, cheating, and stealing, he's got a Republican counterpart that's doing the same. So what we do here is we try to let you listen to both sides of that equation. We try to cut through the BS. We try to bring you the truth the best that we can. If you don't like what we think is the truth, then explain to us where we're wrong. We love that discussion. We're not going to scream and yell and belittle anybody. We refuse to do that. That's why we have open lines and everything else here, which we get quite a few calls on. You know, the bottom line is, I for one am glad that mainstream media is failing and failing miserably. I never went into this expecting to make a profit. And quite frankly, over the last few years, my expectations have been met. We're not making a profit. But it's only because we've never went after that commercial end of it. You know, I was asked, and I've got to put this out there because a lot of people have been asking me this recently. Last week, I actually went onto our Facebook page at Louisville Politics, and I made the announcement that I have been approached multiple times to write a book. And this latest offer is a pretty damn good one. It's going to give me enough income to take care of the things we need to take care of here for a little while. And, you know, I'm going to make some money on the back end as well as the front end. Anyway, the long story short, one of the things that they want is for me to tell all. That means every bit of research I've got, everything that I've got, everything that I've been working years on, and I've got mountains of stuff here to go through, believe me, is pretty important stuff. The Jim King investigation, we got the highest fine in Kentucky history through the courts. Judy Greene was impeached because of us. You know, the John Gassett thing with the KDFWR, we're involved with all of that. All these other different things that we've accomplished. You know, but the one thing they're primarily focused on is they want me to tell them who Jim King is sleeping with, who Jerry Abramson is sleeping with, and all of these other things. So I've got to tell you folks this now, and hopefully this will make it easier than trying to figure out how to get a hold of everybody individually because I've gotten hundreds of emails. I am not going to take that deal. It really comes down to a sense of morality. If a politician is doing something wrong, they're going to be held accountable to it. I have made that clear. I've made that statement. I've followed through with that at every great expense I could come through to make sure we got accountability. But when you get into the personal lives, we have to understand there are children, grandchildren, wives, husbands, all these other people involved. How many families do you split apart because somebody is doing something wrong in their job? And for me, I finally decided, and it shouldn't have been a tough decision, but from a financial standpoint, it made it a tough decision. But I'm not going to forget who I am or what we're all about here. So that book will not be written. I will ultimately write a book, but I will self-publish it versus taking any kind of deals with these publishers. I am not going to be the guy that destroys families and hurts kids. I came from a broken home. I know what that's like. I'm not going to be the cause of somebody else doing that. So I wanted to get that out there, Ed, while we have time on the air. Bottom line, folks, get involved. Get up to speed on what's really going on. If you'd like to advertise on this show or any of our other shows, we air in prime time Sunday through Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. Sunday through Thursday, we've got our show, The Dale the Truth Show, Ken Moman with Liberty Unbridled. If you want to advertise with any of these shows, give us a call, 502-742-8519. If you want to advertise with our Louisville Politics Red Springs website, same number, or you can write to me direct at myviewmatters@AOL.com. In the meantime, that's a wrap. Ed, have a great week. We'll see you Monday.
All right, sir.
All right, sir. And for the rest of you guys, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Thank you, Ed. We appreciate it. We'll be here tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and we will be here with Dale the Truth Live. You're going to love it. Let me tell you, we always got a lot going on. We'll see you then. Take care. Have a good night. God bless.